Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Pawnee. It's Greg and Jim, and we've got a great episode for you this week. First, we're talking about Meet and Greet Season 4's fantastic Halloween episode.
Yes, and then please stick around for our interview with my TV daughter, the one, the only, Millicent Gurgits herself. Yes, Sarah Wright Olsen, and you will love her.
We're getting together to talk about all the things we used to do. The laughs, the passions, the little Sebastians, the pets with send it up into the sky. We're calling it Parks and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parks and Recollection. We're back again. I am one of your hosts, Jim O'Hare, most known as Gary, Larry, Jared, Terry, or even Barry. Parks and Rec. And then there's some dude sitting across from me. Who are you?
Oh, thank you for it. Yeah, I feel like I just won the lottery. I'm Greg Levine. You know me. I've been the writer assistant on Parks and Rec. I've been a writer on Parks and Rec. And now I have the honor to sit across from you talking about Parks and Rec collection.
You lucky bastard.
It's a joy. It's honestly, you never know when you peak in life.
Yeah, this is it.
You know, there's this thing like you never know when the best time of your life is going to be until you're at the end of it and you can look back and say, I guess that was one of the highs.
Is being with me better than when you had your baby? Be honest, Greg. Be honest.
Be honest. Say, right? Yeah, because she'll listen to this.
Yeah, down the road, she will listen.
I guess right now I would say to you, it's better. But
good move.
10 years, 15, 20 years when she's listening to this, I hope she knows that I said that just because of this hostage.
You knew you had to.
This hostage situation.
And you also know that I will happily walk off in a huff.
I know.
If you don't say what I want you to say. So good. We're all on the same page.
That's how you were on set, right?
Yes, that is how I was on set. Everybody knew Amy. Everybody was like, oh God, here's O'Hare. Be careful. Anything can happen. Don't set him off.
I think it's important for people listening to know that that is actually not the case, that you were incredibly lovely.
Oh, please. I had my moments.
Well, you're a method actor. You're like, for this show, I'm going to be wonderful,
yes.
Even though I happen to be a terrible
An
idiot.
Absolute idiot. Yeah. I had mentioned this to Greg, this little behind the scenes things. When we were doing Parks, you know, the ADs would come to your trailer, knock on the door, you know, Jim, hey, 5 minutes warning, you're going to be going in. And every once in a while, I would have to say, you guys, I'm so sorry, but I'm in the middle of a Maury Povich story and I'm about to find out who the baby daddy is and I don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
So they would normally accommodate. Sometimes it was like, Jim, we gotta go.
What is it about episodes of shows like that where you're like, I never cared about this before. I'm probably not going to think about it maybe 2 seconds after it's over. But right now, I am so committed.
So invested.
Yes.
Dude, I'm with that. So many of the reality shows. Because I'll watch a show and go, oh, this person. And then the next season, who won last year?
Yeah,
I have no concept of who even won. It's silly.
Well,
you know, we don't care about other shows.
No. This is the show we should be talking about.
Yes.
And by the way, this is not a show that leaves you the moment after it's over. This is a show that stays with you so much that they said, hey, guys, come into a recording booth, talk about it.
Yes.
So let's talk about this specific episode, right? It's season 4, episode 5. It's called Meet and Greet, written by the great, one of the greats, Katie Dippold.
Truly one of the greats.
And directed by Wendy Stansler, another great.
Yes.
It aired on October 27th, 2011. And Jim, can you read a little blurb? Tell us what it's about.
Yeah, well, Tom organizes a campaign event for Leslie, kind of, but only seems to want to promote his company, Entertainment 720. And then April and Andy throw a baller Halloween party, okay? And unfortunately, they neglect to tell Ben. And also, what's interesting is this episode was shot sixth in the production order, but you guys had always planned it to air fifth. Now, I have a question. Why does that happen?
Well, that happens from time to time when, I don't know, we have production needs, or we have guest casts who can't show up on time, or not show up on time, but we don't have them yet. So let's say we we're going to have someone in this episode, but they're unavailable for 2 weeks, so we can push it. We tend to not like to push things too much because there's a benefit from recording and shooting in order, as close to order as possible. You know that.
Totally, for an actor.
You can track your storyline, your character's arc, what's happened before. But we'll do it for location reasons. We'll do it for a lot of reasons. Yeah. It's not often done. But in this case, I was trying to remember why it happened. I think it may have been the requirements of the episode that's going to come after this and how where we needed to shoot it. But anyway,
there are shows that do this thing called block shooting. And that scares the crap out of me. I have done it. And basically, it's when they'll block the whole season. And so if you have a location, you have to be somewhere in different episodes, you will shoot all those scenes from the different episodes. I just find as an actor, it's very confusing. But if you have good, you know, obviously directors and producers and wardrobe and hair who keep you on track, because you're constantly going, where are we? What is happening here? And I do believe there was once or twice we block shot a couple of scenes on Parks. Am I making that up because I've done it on other shows and I'm confusing things?
We have. There have been one or two times we shot two episodes at the same time, I remember.
Yeah.
One of them was, they're season five. I think one of them was my episode and the episode before it. And Dean wound up directing both of them. I think for production needs and guest cast needs and everything, it was just easier to shoot it this way.
Yeah.
And so we shot over the course of 10 days, because most comedies, hours, a 5 day shoot. Yeah. We did two episodes over that time. I think in season seven, the last season, we did the same thing.
Which makes a lot of sense if you can use the same director, because if you're not using the same director, they are bouncing in and out. I don't know. I mean, I've done it. I find it very confusing. I love that in general, we shot week to week, episode to episode, because I'm not very bright.
Well, we're already in our notes, these like fun little call outs about the episode. We talked about this production order thing. You know, another great thing I want to call out is that Andy and April's wrestler themed Halloween costumes are a sumo wrestler after he lost the weight. And UFC fighter Chuck Liddell. Sadly, we don't get to see Ben in his Batman costume again, although when you're Batman, you're always Batman.
Yeah. But you can't get enough of that.
No.
You just can't.
And, you know, I don't know if this, I can't remember if this was intentional, but Chuck Liddell's UFC team is the Pit. And as we all know, Andy fell into the Pit. He fell in it.
And now when you guys are in the writer's room, are you pitching what type of party this is going to be? I mean, you know, it's Halloween.
Right.
But how are you pitching all of our costumes? Because, you know, I was Potato Head, and everybody was all sorts of different things.
Well, that's how you always are, right? You're always dressed as Potato Head.
I am always basically a Potato Head, yes. Greg, that hurt me deeply, really inside, just so you know. Really hurt, yeah.
All right, so I got
I'm going to try to get through the rest of this episode, if production can be ready to shut it all down in any second. Yeah.
And for me, I see it as getting 1 point.
Yes.
But Halloween costumes tend to be tough when you want to make something that's both evergreen, so that it can be watched at any point without too many specific cultural references. And also when you have to have things cleared, where they have to be legally cleared, so you have the ownership rights to them, right? So if you are on an NBC Universal, while they have a large library, I think the point was, let's just have things. You never know what ownership rights are going to be, and that can change.
So someone can't just be a SpongeBob, because that could turn into a whole legal
nightmare. You have to have either approval or own the rights.
Forget about all that. Yeah.
One of the other great things that we'll talk about when we get to Ron's story, but we find out what April and Andy have in that home toolbox of theirs, that loose bag of things, a hammer, a half-eaten pretzel, a baseball card, some cartridge that says Sonic and Hedgehog, which is amazing because Ben Schwartz would go on to play Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, wow. Good one.
A scissor half.
That's my favorite thing in the whole bag. Yes, a scissor half.
Yeah, which maybe, because you know you call them scissors. I wonder if you just call them a scissor.
Oh.
You know? That's a shower thought.
That is.
And a flashlight filled with jelly beans.
Brilliant.
And then, you know, one other great list to call out here is the small businesses in attendance at Leslie's campaign event include Kernston's Rubber Nipples, Food and Stuff, JJ's Diner, Glenmore Discount Cemetery, Tramp Stamp Tattoos, Enormous Kenny's Fried Dough Stand, and Mobile Phone Emporium. Smooth Operator Bikini Waxes, Jeff's Savings and Loan, and Sue's Salads.
Oh, poor Sue.
And there's this great moment. Did you catch this?
That I did. I had it written down in my notes. Absolutely.
When Sue's Salads is mentioned, you can hear a very light but audible groan from the audience.
And also, when Amy Leslie is telling everybody, oh, and this person is here, yeah. JJ's, and you know, Smooth Operator, blah, blah. And then when she goes, and Sue's Salads. I mean, her whole physicality changes. Yeah. It's just a moment. And then Sue is lights up a little because she's like, by the way, that's played by Becky Thayer, who is just one of the funniest. I did 100 years ago when I first moved to Los Angeles. There was a show called She TV, and it was all women. The cast was all women, and it had a SNL kind of feel to it. And Becky was on there. And there in the old days, there was a Lucky Vanos commercial. I don't know if anyone ever saw it, but it's where he would take off his shirt and the women are just, oh, it's 11 o'clock. We have to go to the window. And it was for Diet Coke. Well, the bit was, I'm down there. I take off my shirt.
Yes.
But what I loved about the bit, they didn't do like, oh, it was, oh, look at that. Look at So it was very, anyway.
Yeah.
So I had worked with Becky before. And anyway, she's just so funny. But when Amy says, oh, and Sue Salad, she lights up. And then 2 seconds later, the moan from the audience. Oh.
Yeah. This was not the moment you thought it would be, Sue.
Yes, it was not your moment, Sue. But when you own Sue Salad, you don't have a moment.
No.
Your moments are few and far between.
Well, let's talk about some of the first moments of the episode in our synopsis. Andy and April decide to throw a big Halloween party at their house, but fail to inform their roommate, Ben. Ben decides not to confront them directly about it and be passive aggressive instead, which, you know, always tends to work.
It's gotten me 60 years.
Also at the party, Jerry gives Chris permission to invite his daughter Millicent to come.
Big mistake.
Yes. Across town, Leslie hires Tom's company, Entertainment 720, to organize a campaign meet and greet for her and these important Pawnee business owners that we mentioned. However, Leslie is annoyed to discover that the event is dominated by Entertainment 720 advertisements and images of Tom's face with hardly any mention of Leslie. I mean, wow, what a beginning of the episode.
So much. A lot
to start up. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, the very first frame of the episode is a bag from Food and Stuff. It's Andy and April talking about getting stuff for their party.
For the party. Yep.
All of these things for their party that they got at Food and Stuff. I just love that they really do have food there and a lot of stuff.
And I also love it's Andy and April. It's a talking head. And April just looks at the camera and they're talking about the party. And she goes, someone will die. And Andy, who's trying to, fun. And she goes, and of murder.
Yes.
And she goes, there's dead people that we just murdered. There'll be blood orphans. Andy's like, there's no blood orphans. And then he's like, what is a blood orphan? Mm. Yeah, brilliant.
Yes.
Just brilliant.
That's the fun of those two characters together, I think, in that they so love each other, but they're so different in how they approach what fun is.
Yes. But I like that Andy's a little nervous about her response.
How far are you going to take this?
This sweetie.
Well, he's also met her friend Oren, and he will show up again. And so there is darkness there.
I love Oren, but we'll get to him.
So the campaign event turns into a party for Tom's face, right?
Big time.
You know, Tom's going to be Tom. And I think just the balance of him being extremely selfish with being extremely thoughtful is just it's very apparent in this episode. It's clearly an important thing because it's going to set up the end of Entertainment 720.
Yeah.
It's going to get Leslie to remember that as much as this campaign is important to me, my friends are equally important to me. I just like this. I like when we get these gray areas of Tom, that he's not just all swag.
And bravado.
Right.
But also in the episode, when he's convincing Leslie he's going to be the one to do this for her, you know, to promote this, the event, he puts a book in front of her. I don't know if you noticed this. That is so amazing. I mean, Tom, when he wants to do something, he can really get it done.
Yes.
That book was almost a Leslie type book.
Yes, that's a great
with
point.
With everything that she could possibly need, everyone who's going to be there, who they're connected to. Like, that's a lot of work.
Right.
So if Tom had, and he did learn where to put his energies, he's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But most of the time, he's too self-serving and he screws up the whole damn thing. But I was blown away by that book. I thought that book was amazing.
That's a great point. And it also shows you that, like, you know, Leslie does rub off on a lot of our characters, right?
Yes, of course.
Right. We got to talk about two things related to Chris in this episode that we just see at the beginning. First of all, Chris as Sherlock Traeger.
Oh.
this uncanny ability to text without looking at his phone. I have to tell you, I remember the bit when it was pitched. I remember seeing the episode originally, watching it now in prep. There's something really beautiful and creepy about watching it happen. The perfect eye contact.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about this moment then, Jim. So Jerry's telling Chris he's beautiful in the scene.
He's beautiful.
And then Chris returns the compliment saying, you're beautiful on the inside, where your spirit lives. We don't talk about it too often, but Chris can be vain, right?
Yes.
In the previous episode, which we just, you know, talked about, he originally turns down the lunch with Jerry and Millicent, but only says yes once he sees that Millie is very attractive.
Oh, he's totally vain.
Yeah.
But also, think about this is a really horrible moment. So Jerry, just because Jerry's staring at him and goes, well, you're beautiful. Like, because Jerry just is Jerry. And, and there was certainly no, you know, I don't know, sexuality aligned to it. Or it was just like, oh my God, this man is so beautiful. So he says it, which how what a lovely thing. If we could just say sometimes that to people, my God, you're beautiful. Yeah. How sweet. And he comes back with, well, you're beautiful. But then on the inside, where your spirit lives.
He just can't.
He just,
he's so optimistic, but he has to tell a version of his truth.
It is his truth. Yeah. It is not a visual that he can say is beautiful, but inside, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's just.
Well, I'm lucky enough to stare across from you
every day, my friend.
In this booth here, and I can see your eyes, and you're beautiful.
Yes.
Well, back in our synopsis, Leslie is able to talk to the most influential person at the event, the Kernston's rubber nipple guy, Mr. President, as Leslie calls him. But then Tom pulls him aside to pitch him getting involved in Entertainment 720, which further upsets Leslie. Back at the Halloween party, Ron takes it upon himself to fix things up in April and Andy's house and enlists Anne's help.
Okay, big question. Why was Ron at the Halloween party?
Yeah, he doesn't need to go.
I find that hard to believe. And he also has a set costume that we got to see for a couple of seasons.
Yes, he is a pirate.
He is a pirate. So I love it. He did go. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little anti-Ron to show up to a Halloween party.
Yes. Clearly, he doesn't want to go to a thing like that. He doesn't need to go to a thing like that. But we do see him show up from time to time at non-work events with work people.
Absolutely.
We've seen him in Leslie's house at her dinner party. I think there's something about, you know, he doesn't want to admit it, but there's some joy in being with the people,
absolutely.
Right?
Ron is the perfect example of someone, you know, he's got the facade, but he truly loves these people. And I, 100% agree with that.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
This call out where Ben is printing something in this scene where he's in the party, he's printing something on the printer, obviously. And if you have eagle eyes with quick pausing skills, you'll see that Ben is using a Sabre printer, the same Sabre from The Office. In fact, some research has told me that Sabre printers have been spotted on Dexter as well.
Wow.
I don't know. I think it's a cool little...
That's what they call an Easter egg? Is that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's probably an Easter egg. It could be a thing where this was then created for The Office, and then they have a lot of props in their prop houses.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so our, you know, our prop people, Gabe Perello's probably like, oh, we should bring in Sabre.
Right.
Sabre, as they first thought the company was called. Anyway.
Well, I'm a huge, you know, a huge Office fan. And so I love those kind of... little things. I just love it.
So Ron taking it upon himself to fix things in April and Andy's house, right? First, he goes to Lowe's and he refuses help, but the guy comes up and says, sir, can I help you? And says, I know more than you, to the sales associate. And the sales associate is like, okay. Yeah. Like, great. I don't have to deal with you. Wonderful. So anyway, this story of Ron fixing things in the house, it kind of reminds me of an episode of The Office, speaking of that show. Season 3, episode 18. It's Cocktails. And it's when they go to the party at David Wallace's house. And Dwight winds up giving, it's this weird C story with him where he just gives it a very thorough inspection.
Yeah.
It is interesting. There's something really similar, I would guess, a bit about Dwight and Ron in this storyline, which is that I'm in this place, I have this interest in this thing, and I'm not going to let that stop me. Like, I'm not going to go to the party. I'm not just going to be a party. I'm going to be myself, and I just can't help it. But as this gift for them, as this housewarming gift for them, I'm going to fix their house. And what's
it goes against all social norms.
Yes.
You don't show up to someone's house. No. And start looking for problems.
Right, unless you're like my family, who whenever they come to my house are like, do you notice that the toilet's like a little, like the thing's a little loose? My dad will do this thing where he'll just take any poster that's not level, he'll just level it like he has perfect level vision. But, you know, back to the meet and greet, the title of the episode.
Because the storyline for the Halloween party is so strong and is the 720 fake meet and greet. Is that the A story, the meet and greet?
Yeah, for sure.
So that is the A story.
Yeah.
Even though it felt very equal, like each, like a lot of times the A is so strong and then your B is less time and then if there's a C, whatever. But I felt like this was, each one had their super powerful moments.
You know, generally we call an A story, the main story of the episode is usually your main protagonist. In this case, it's generally always Leslie.
Yeah.
Usually seated in episodes like Ron and Tammy, where it becomes pretty much Ron's story and everyone's a passenger in his story. He's the driver. In this case, it's just Leslie and Tom. So it's two of our 10 characters.
Yeah.
And the Halloween location party collected everybody else. So at Halloween, you have Jerry and Chris, you have Ron and Anne, you have April and Andy and Ben.
Yeah.
And so that's perhaps why it felt, that's perhaps why it felt that way, which is that our B and C stories, which each get progressively slightly less time, were all at the same location. So every time we went back there, it kind of felt like one big story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Leslie and Tom are on this bit of an island, but it's the main story since it's about Leslie's campaign.
Yeah, no, I get that. I was just wondering because both were so strong. I thought it was just really tight.
And and Amy plays that frustration with Tom with disease so well in this.
God.
Because you can't be a jerk. She can't be the jerk character that she started out as, that like, not the jerk, but that person who just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Like, she gets it and she's annoyed. She's annoyed on a friend level. She's annoyed on a coworker level. And you see that. And what's great, we'll get to near the end of the episode, is that she remembers ultimately like, oh, this is my friend. This is the person I work with, person I really like. And they're going through something. I just really like that.
Anytime these characters, first of all, I love how they pair people off sometimes, that like this with Ron and Anne is just lovely.
Yeah.
Because he is so normally wants nothing to do with
it. Right.
He's giving her fake names because he's just trying to keep his distance. So yeah, this was such a nice moment for both of them. And Leslie loves these coworkers.
Yeah.
I mean, they are her heart. And even when he shit all over her, because that was a terrible thing he did.
Mm-hmm.
Really terrible.
Yes.
She shows up to her meet and greet.
Yeah.
To his face.
Yeah.
Everywhere. On everything.
Yeah, no, and she still shows up for a friend after he did that to her.
My God, gets into a damn hot tub.
Well, let's return to our synopsis, because speaking of showing up, you know, we know Chris is still dating Millicent, Jerry's daughter.
Yes.
And he, with Jerry's blessing, so to speak, brings her to the Halloween party. Unfortunately, Jerry has to view their raunchy acts on the dance floor, which makes him very uncomfortable. Played so well, Jim, by you.
Thank you.
Leslie gives a speech to all the business owners, but Tom interrupts with a huge promotional presentation for Entertainment 720, upstaging her and turning off the crowd. Ben refuses to tell Andy directly that he's mad about them throwing the party. We have Andy wrestling Ben, the Dwyer method of resolving conflicts, right?
Yeah.
Yelling, wrestling, crying, followed by lots of hugs, and then more wrestling, but the fun kind, and then crying when the fun kind of wrestling gets out of hand.
You know, Chris Pratt, who we all love, not to go off on a tangent about Chris Pratt, but he's as kind and wonderful as you want him to be. You know, you see this character of Andy Dwyer, and since then, you know, obviously his world has turned around. He's like a One of the biggest movie stars in the whole damn world. Yeah, yes. Chris Pratt, that guy. But he is as awesome as you want him to be. But so they were just having a lot of fun. But also, Chris sweats. And when Chris was at his heavier days, he sweated even more. Mm. So that was a sweat fest that whole day. But yeah. See, Jim O'Hare, who always sweats, loves when other people sweat because it takes some of the attention off of me.
Right.
So I was very happy that day because he was a wet mess. Mm. And of course, poor Adam, Ben, is wrapped around a sweat mess.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a big day. It was a big day. And actually, those kind of days are fun because so many outfits, so many our wardrobe people, everybody, you know, every department on that show was so good at what they did. And the extras were super fun. That was a really special day on set. I loved it. A couple of days. It wasn't just one day.
I think a lot of the days where it's most of the cast in the same room together.
Yeah, it's always the best.
A lot of fun because in between takes, you're laughing.
Bullshit, laugh, telling stories. Yeah, right. 100%. 100%.
Jim, you teased a bit of this Ron and Ann story earlier. Yeah. I love it. The Ron and Ann bond while fixing things. It was a nice use of Ann outside of her kind of just like the normal role she plays as like the straight woman to Leslie or even trying to get Ron and April to like her, right? She was genuinely enjoying this time and didn't care about Ron's weirdness with her. She's like, I'm learning how to fix something.
And Ron pulled her into it. Yes. He needed tiny hands.
Yeah. Also, probably as a nurse, she's probably quite steady with her hands.
Makes sense.
I watching this again, I didn't pick up on it at the time, but I feel, I don't know if I'm crazy, but I feel like Nick and Rashida have some great chemistry here in
this. Dude, I have it in my notes. Same thing.
Yeah. It almost feels like we're building a Ron and Ann love story when you watch the early parts of the season. So she tries to endear herself to Ron and April in one of the previous episodes in Born and Raised. You know, add to the fact that he likes pretty dark-haired brunettes.
Yes.
Now they're having this great bonding session, and she seems to like it, and he seems to like having her there. It almost feels like, for a second, that we're purposely building a love story with them. That doesn't obviously happen or does it if you're watching this for the first time or does it? But I was just remarking that there's something
when you
special.
Guys are in a room piecing these two together, is there talk of that? Do people say, well, maybe, because I know you guys are planning for the future, you know, each episode is about the next one. Is there ever talk of, because really they're very sweet together in here.
I don't recall there being talk specifically about these two. We've talked about this in a previous episode of Parks and Recollection, but, you know, sometimes you would talk about, should these two people be together? Greg Daniels famously in the room one day said that Ron and Leslie should either kiss or be together. And the reaction from the writers were like, no, we don't. That's not right. But I shudder at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it to see what conversation would arise.
Of course,
right? Because you never know what idea will come from a pitch.
Yeah.
I don't think there was conversation about Ron and Anne getting together. But, you know, we talked about this also with April and Andy with Aubrey and Chris, where we saw the chemistry between them and said, this is undeniable and this would be so fun. And what if? And it just spawned all these great episode ideas between the two of them. So anyway, I like watching this and thinking, what if?
What if? Absolutely.
So let's jump back into our story and our synopsis. Leslie angrily confronts Tom about his actions, and he finally admits that Entertainment 720 has gone bankrupt and that Leslie's meet and greet was his last-ditch effort to acquire clients to save the company. Ron and April continue to repair everything they can find in Andy and April's house. And after being dragged around the entire party by Andy, Ben finally becomes angry and accidentally breaks Andy's nose when he tries to free himself. Oy. I just love that Leslie wants to take Tom to get comfort food.
Yes.
When he says this whole truth about his company. You know, I also like when he says, where are we going to get albacore tuna with crispy onions at this time of night? What a great comfy food. It is actually, sounds like a delicious comfy food.
I guess, but yeah, she's thinking late night, of course, in her case, waffles. But like any of us would think a diner or something, and of course, Tom.
Right. And she's done this before. She's taken, like Ron and Leslie have bonded after their fight in Sweetums over diner food. There's, you know, I think for Leslie, the table, the communal dining is a great way to just calm everything down, to just set the level set and say, this is what's going on. Let's get through
this. It's the comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah. It's totally her comfort zone specifically. Yeah. And it is one of the great comfort zones.
Yeah. And Tom revealing the truth was so sweet. And her accepting the truth. Because right before this, she is trying to drown him.
Right.
She's physically trying to drown him.
Right. In that great, you know, car jacuzzi, jacuzzi that he has.
Limo jacuzzi.
Yeah.
And I love, because it's Leslie, she hauls her ass up on that thing and she just steps right in.
Yeah, yeah.
She's pissed. And there's a line that I wrote down because it was so great when she does a talking head. When she realizes that this is a shit show, that he has screwed up this whole thing for her, she looks to the camera and she goes, I don't like to throw the word butthead around too often, but I can say without hesitation that Tom is being a real dick.
Yes.
What a great line.
Yes,
what a great line. And the way Amy, Leslie, hit the word.
Yes.
Oh.
And because you don't hear her say stuff like that too often. So
you
she's
don't.
Really feeling it.
She was feeling it.
Yes.
Yeah. That was her day. That was her moment.
Right. And it's early days in her campaign.
But
these are the important days for her. This is, you know, that feeling where I'm not an imposter. Am I really doing this? And here he is kind of stealing the show from the person who's supposed to be the show.
Full-blown steal.
Right.
There's very little reference to Leslie Knope at all.
Speaking of losing their cool, you know, it's nice to see Jerry actually lose his cool for once.
Yeah.
He's exacerbated by Millicent and Chris making out next to him. Also, I don't think that moment where the power goes out and then it comes back on
and you see
Chris and Millie going at it, almost like their plane is going down. It's a fresh change, right? How did it feel for your character to have that moment?
I love that moment because it is so crazy. It is so ridiculous. And further, there's a line at the end, which we'll talk about, I'm sure we'll get there, that Chris says to Jerry that is just mind-blowing. That his head would explode. But here, Jerry's the one who pushed this because Millicent wasn't coming.
Right.
Chris was being very respectful.
Right.
He went from being very respectful to full-blown mouth-sucking Jerry's daughter.
Right.
And he's 2 feet away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
Well, for him, it's like, I already have permission to marry her, right? Kind of, great, I'm going for it.
Good to go. Yeah.
Well, speaking of other relationships, Andy and Ben's relationship in this episode is great. You know, the headlock around the house into, we're not friends, we're brothers.
Yeah.
It's a nice,
that's so sweet.
Yeah, you know, it kind of just worked out between the two
of
them.
And as simple as Andy is, he knew something was up.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to let it go. And I love that because Andy has a huge heart. I mean, he's just an Andy in your life, as crazy it would make your life be, it would be really wonderful.
Well, especially when someone's being passive aggressive.
Yes.
Right? To not engage and call it out almost helps. It co-signs on that passive aggressiveness.
Yeah.
It allows it to continue and get worse. And he's going to just like flip the switch kind of thing and be like, no. I'm stopping it.
But for him to be the one to do that, I love.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So in our synopsis, as we're coming to a close in the episode, Ron thanks Anne for helping him by giving her a brand new toolbox, which she loves.
Yay.
Leslie and Tom reconcile after Tom shows her the video biography of her life that he originally planned to present. Tom also begs and bribes Kirsten's rubber nipples to give Leslie another meeting.
Yeah.
And as the Halloween party ends, April avenges Jerry by stealing Chris's keys and throwing them in the trash.
Bless her. God bless her. To see Ron hand over that toolkit.
Yeah.
Because for Ron, that's a big deal. That to me was his saying to Anne, you have been anointed.
Yes.
We are now acquaintances.
Right.
You know, friends might be a big word, but we're acquaintances. I will acknowledge you. You have impressed me.
And he doesn't often give gifts.
No.
He gives more like a sly nod, like of approval, but rarely a gift. And it is, hey, gifts, parties, jobs. Ron's giving Anne a gift. Party. We got a Halloween party. The Parks and Rec tradition continues of gifts, parties, and jobs.
Yeah.
It is such a lovely moment.
I love that moment. And I also love when there's a power outage and Anne's like, okay, we're shutting it down, people. Like, she turns into construction worker.
Same way she is when she's saying, we're going to take the, I don't know, I'm just making, I can't remember. We're going to take the phalange and put it into the
right,
socket.
And
he's like, that means absolutely that nothing.
Is, yeah,
but nothing. She's like, I don't care. I love it.
And also, we can't forget the moment when during the party, when Jerry sees what's happening between his daughter and Chris. And April also sees it. Mm. And she walks over to Jerry. She stares at him. And then she, because Jerry is wearing a Mr. Potato Head right. with a smile. And she rips off that smile and she turns it into a frown. Mm-hmm. What a great moment.
It's like a perfect silent film.
Yes.
Right? That whole sequence is no words. You watch them making out. You know, he's pretty much daggering her on the dance floor. Yes. April comes over, does this thing. No words, but there's so much said in that. Oh. It's really great.
And I can tell you, that's one of the moments people most talk to me about.
Really?
People love that moment because it's just crushing in many ways.
Yeah.
It's just crushing.
Well, that Tom and Leslie moment, you know, when he shows her that video, it's really great. It's really lovely. First of all, we learn that Leslie's full name is Leslie Barbara Knope. Wow. And she was born on January 18th, 1975. So a little thing for the bio. But just to see him express, I think, his appreciation for her, his respect for her, which he doesn't often do. Clearly he does if he made a video like that. Sure, it has that Ken Burns vibe and feel. So that's the joke in it. But, you know, he had to do that. He had to do that from his knowledge of her. So there's something really, again, sweet that she stopped, in a way, caring about her campaign event for the sake of Tom.
Yeah.
And he spent time doing something for somebody else, for Leslie.
Again, when Tom puts his efforts to something, he can make it happen. That video was incredible.
Yeah, it's really
and
great.
And heartwarming.
Yeah.
And she's going to play it on her grave, like for the rest of her life, it's going to be playing.
It's great.
Imagine the time editing and all that stuff that goes into that.
It makes me want someone to do that for me. Just put that out there for anyone listening.
Hold our breath. Anyway.
I also want to call out, because Jim, you did that great call out of the Mr. Potato Head moment with April. You know, Jerry's last straw is Chris announcing that he's going to take Millie home and they may be having intercourse, leading Jerry to leave in a huff, saying, please, you got to stop saying things like that to me.
Can you imagine?
Because you're a comedy character. You're also in the world. You're also the lady's father.
Her father.
Where at any point would why would Chris even think to say that? He's just so happy. And Sarah
Chris
Wright
is very
Olson,
much about facts. Yeah.
And Sarah Wright Olson is so good in this.
She's awesome.
Plays it just right. Every little thing. And the alchemy of the three of these characters together is great.
Yeah.
What an episode. Oh my God.
So much going on in that episode.
But I feel like the Halloween episodes always have a lot of fun things because we usually gather everybody into one space. There's a lot of fun. I love our episodes when everybody's kind of feeding off of the same comedy engine, right? Of this is being the party at Andy and April's house, or maybe a lot of them. The next one that comes to mind is Andy and April's wedding, where everyone's in that space having
love
fun.
That. Yes.
And you get to like feed off and see your favorite people in these little moments. So it kind of feels like this contained, I don't want to say bottle, but this is a contained episode.
And then you're throwing in Oren.
Right.
And that just
terrifies you.
Just terrifies you. But it's so perfect. It's just so perfect.
Yeah, it's great. It's great when you can have someone that everyone feels the exact same. I guess April really loves him, but I feel like if you put a lie detector test on April, she'd be like, I love Oren because he scares the fucking shit out of me.
Absolutely. She loves Oren because of the reaction she gets from everybody else.
Yes,
100%.
Yes.
That's why Oren is there.
Well, Oren's there also to terrify the hell out of Ben, which is so funny in this. So, Jim, final thoughts on this jam-packed episode? I think we're already talking about it. How are you feeling?
Love this episode so much for so many reasons. As a guy who got to play one of the characters in the show, Jerry, there was so much going on.
You were Jerry.
I was Jerry in this episode.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm April in the next. Each episode is different. So it was lovely. Jerry's at this party. Hey, he's invited. That number one is there's a big coup. And then he's happy. He sees Chris and he's like, oh, bring my daughter. It's all good. And then that turns to hell pretty quick because we're on top of each other. But what I love about this episode for Jerry is at the end, April has Jerry's back.
Yeah.
Because she screws over Chris. And I think that was April's way of saying to Chris, that wasn't cool, dude. You know, the humping and the making out and the whole thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
That's fun. I had that in my notes about when I was watching this episode, that it's not called out at all, except for that one moment where she turns Jerry's smiley face into a frown that's just clocking his energy. But she doesn't really, they don't have a scene together talking about it. It's just that one little scene lit between the two of them. But she clearly, it really bothered her enough that she's doing this to get back at Chris and to help you out, to help Jerry out. And I think that's so great.
That's how I took it, totally to help Jerry. And April's character, I think, is very observant. Mm. She doesn't have to have, I mean, throughout the series, she is just very observant and she knows how to mess with people.
Yeah.
And in this case, as much as she has been on Jerry, you know, relentlessly on Jerry, this was a moment where she had his back, and I do love that.
Yeah.
It gave me the warms, the feels. Mm. You know what I'm saying there, Greg?
It gave
me the feels.
I do think I understand what a feeling is, the way you talk about it.
Yeah, well, if people only knew what goes on around here. Hurt my feelings daily, everybody. Somebody help me, get me out of here.
Well, does that lead us into our episode MVP, our most valuable Pawnean? Which character, Jim, do you think this episode sticks out to the most?
Boys. I mean, there's so much going on in this episode. Strictly because I played Jerry, I'm going to give April. Just because she came into his back. But as far as the episode overall, you first. I don't know what to say here.
Yeah, this is a tough one because I really love the Leslie and Tom dynamic.
Sure,
that exists. I love that hot tub scene, the limo hot tub scene where they kind of, you know, Tom breaks down this confident like shell he puts on himself, this armor. I really love that scene. I love that. But I also love all the stuff. Every character gets so much fun. I mean, Anne gets so much fun with Ron. And
so much. And so sweet. And she's so feeling herself at that party. Lies, just telling the people, here's how it's going to go down, people. Here's how it's going down.
Yeah, I think it's so fun. There's some
and everyone has great moments.
Everybody has a great
moment. Even Donna. Because Donna wasn't in this one a whole lot.
Right.
But her quick moment when she totally dismisses Chris. Do you remember that moment?
Oh, sure.
Because he's this and she's like, mm-mm. And you know, Donna, she don't mess around.
Yeah.
She doesn't have time for that. So bye-bye. So they were, you know, but yeah, I don't know.
It's tough to say that we're not giving it to a person because I would want to say that it's the party April and Andy threw.
Interesting.
Is perhaps the most valuable Pawnean here.
Yeah.
But maybe it's the Pawnean we least suspect and it is Oren. The dark arts master.
Wow, maybe he set up this whole nightmare.
The whole nightmare.
Wow, I like where you're going with
shit,
that.
Oren, you're in the studio with us right now.
Wait a minute, put that away. What?
Well, Jim, we have to talk about something.
I don't want to.
I know, but we have to.
I know we do, but I don't want to. But yes, okay, let's do it.
All right, well, you have a problem.
Well, no, it's a sad thing. I mean, it's not ultimate. It's a wonderful thing, and the opportunity is happening for somebody, always wonderful.
No.
Yes.
We have to say goodbye to Rob Schulte.
Yeah, Robbie.
I know. Guys, it's been great. I love this show. I really do.
You can tell. Just so people know, the work that Rob does to make this all come together is truly incredible. I don't know. Let's just say it wouldn't be happening without him, and the fact that he's leaving is terrifying. And we're going to miss you because you do such a great job.
Well, I really appreciate that because, you know, the silver lining to all of this is now I'll be able to like listen to the episode and not feel like, I'm at work, you know, because I have such a blast sitting in here and then I, you know, will edit the episodes to like find the best possible moments for you guys. And then by the time the episode comes out, I'll be like, I'll listen to it in a week. And I'll have to come back to it. But now everything's going to be fresh. Sean Doherty's going to take over for me as production. And he is so incredibly talented that this show is going to be set up for success. And I'm really excited to hear what's to come.
That's amazing. Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be better the way you talk about
way
it.
Way better. Thank God this is happening.
Great.
Why have you been here all this time?
Well, here's the thing. Jeez, I added
boy, keeping hell? Us down.
Yeah, what guys, the
you
guys do,
I added the animosity in our show outlines. You don't have to do it.
Okay. Like now. So we're going to stop that. Yeah.
No, but truly, you did such amazing work prepping for every episode. And I know Sean, because he's going to do amazing also. But you are going to be missed. But, you know.
Well, change is a part of life.
It is.
And we wish you the best in the next and next and next. And we'll miss you. And, you know, after talking about such a great episode today with so many more to come, it was so good. I can't wait to be back at this desk with you next time, Jim. But unfortunately, not with Mr. Rob Schulte with us, our amazing producer, to Joe Samuel, our amazing engineer. And I feel like it's fitting. I don't know if you, I think. Will you please say goodbye Tapani from all of us, Salty?
You know what? True, this could get me. Be careful how you do it. It could be very sad here.
Well, from all of us here at Parks and Recollection, goodbye from Pawnee.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This one is one of the more special guests, at least for me, because we have Sarah Wright Olson. Now, who's Sarah Wright Olson? Well, ladies and gentlemen, she is the one, the only, Millicent Gergich.
That's right.
Yes.
Jerry. That's right. Your daughter.
My daughter. Jerry's daughter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
It is so great to have you here. You know, there are certain special people. You played my daughter. So that was, you know, I just love you. And I have, you know, here and there followed what you're doing in your world. And because, and I know we're going to bounce around with 10 different topics. But after Parks, you did a film with Tom Cruise. Like you were like his wife, right? Like a huge major motion picture with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, it's definitely because
of me.
It's because of
me. Yes. And my issue with this is I haven't seen a nickel.
I know.
Yeah, it's an interesting take.
But no, but seriously, you've had like an unbelievable career. And the fact that you were on Parks just warms my heart. And I don't know. I love Sarah.
Tell us, Sarah, about how you came to join us on the show. And that first, I think the first episode we meet you is when you're going to go out to lunch with Jerry, with Jim, and with Rob Lowe and Chris Traeger, and just thrown into the story. Tell us about joining the show.
It was so exciting. I loved the show. I think when the show first started, I had auditioned for another role, like somewhere in the first season. And I didn't get it, but I was pumped. I watched all the episodes. And then one day I just got a call out of the blue. Hey, they want you to come and do Parks. And I was like, what? I don't have to audition. And they were like, well, no, you already did. You like, they kept your audition from whatever it was last year or whatever, you know, whenever that was. And they loved it, but they've thought about you for this other role. They want you to come and play Jerry's daughter. And I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I was like, this is so great. And I was so pumped. I mean, to work with you, Jim, it was such a dream. You were the biggest delight and most joyful, wonderful human being. Everyone on the show is so lovely and warm. I mean, Rashida was like, oh my gosh, use my trailer, like coming out. I was like, not. But I was like, sure, thank you. But everybody was so great. And Rob was amazing to work with and just really funny. And we had weirdly like some friends in common. And so it was awesome. I was so excited. And just, I felt so relaxed coming in that first day that I wanted to be there as much as possible.
Oh, I love that. How was it weird? Again, just because, you know, Rob Lowe has been around, you know, we all know who Rob Lowe is. He's Rob Lowe. Yeah. So yeah. When you got the role, did you know that this was, he's going to be your love interest? Like, did they say that up front?
No. And then, you know, because I think they just like offered it to me and said I was going to be playing your daughter, but they didn't say like what the sort of plot line was going to be. So when I had like, I think one of the first days that we shot, it was for that scene where we were having lunch together. And then we run into him and I had read it before and I was like, it's weird. It kind of feels like he's maybe going to have a crush on me for right, this. And I was like, Pablo? Okay. And he was just so wonderful too. I mean, he's like the nicest and so funny. And I was a little nervous to meet him and to see, you know, you never know. It's like either somebody that is that incredibly famous and known for so much, they're either going to be awesome or they're really going to disappoint you. You're going to hate them forever.
100%. Yes.
That's how I felt when I met Jim.
And it was disappointing.
When I met Jim, it was truly terrible.
Truly terrible.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I do love about like we're hearing of this from you, and because it's something I always thought, and I've probably mentioned it here before, the atmosphere on Parks was truly lovely. And, you know, we've all been on a lot of different shows where, boy, some crazy stuff can happen sometimes and personalities get nutty and this one's not talking to this one and this one's we never had that. And I love that whenever I saw a guest star in a chair, you know, getting hair and makeup in the morning, every one of us approached that person. Hey, welcome to the show. I don't know, validate.
Well, there was this unofficial no assholes policy at Parks, which was like, you know, someone would come in and they would do a role and great, you had that for the story. But if they didn't, you know, jive well, then like we would say maybe that character shouldn't come back or whatever. But then some people were so fun, were great, just felt like part of the family. And so in the writer's room, it's incentivizing to say, well, how else can we bring that character back? They bring a great joy to the set and let's just keep that coming. And I think that was the kind of the Parks MO. So you auditioned for the show and didn't get that part, but got the part, perhaps you're born to play. what was the part you auditioned for? Do you remember?
I wish I could remember. I feel like it was something not as exciting.
Ron Swanson. Was it Ron Swanson?
Yeah, it was Nick Offerman.
Sarah, is that the role you auditioned for?
Yeah, it was Ron Swanson. That's so weird.
Strange.
No, it wasn't for a regular, it was like for a guest star. And I feel like she was either like in a beauty pageant or she was a stripper. I can't remember what it was.
It
was
could have been the beauty pageant episode.
That makes sense.
Early on
that
in season two.
Oh, yeah, maybe that.
I also think it's a great testament to great casting directors. I worked for a casting director for a short time and got to experience that, like, when they find people they like, they just keep bringing them back.
Yeah.
I think it's a testament also to, we had Allison Jones and Nancy Perkins the first season, and Dorian Frankel going forward. And good people are brought in, and then we remember those good people, and then they keep reminding us about that. We're like, oh, we already brought, you know, we brought Sarah in once. And and so it's a great, I think it's a good testament also to the role that the casting directors play, especially in your stories about how you wound up on these shows.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was like I was told that there was like a file that they kept for certain people that they like loved their audition, but obviously that's not where they were going with that specific character. So they were just like, okay, we put you in the file of like this, I don't know, whatever they called it. And then that's how they circled back for this.
Well, I want to jump in and say that we did in the writer's room computer, we had a folder where we took casting videos that we liked, but maybe they didn't wound up in that episode. And then we would throw them in for like public forums, or maybe there was like, we needed like yelling people
and
just to keep. And then sometimes in the casting process, maybe casting sent us auditions and the right person wasn't there for that role. Rather than bring a bunch of people in, we would click on videos and be reminded of these people and be like, oh yeah, that was a great person. Let's bring them in.
It's great.
Did you have any idea that Christie Brinkley was going to be coming in at this point?
Great question.
No, I had no clue. I mean, when I found that out, I was like, wait, what?
It's so random. I know.
It's like describing a fever dream, right?
Exactly. It was obviously a complete shock for me. And I mean, everybody knows who Christie Brinkley
is. Yes, everybody.
I don't know that everybody knows that she is the most joyful, happy, wonderful human being. I mean, now with social media, they probably know that, because if you follow her, you can just see like what she puts out there is just, that's who she is.
Yeah.
But I mean, talk about, I grew up, you know, in Kentucky, And I grew up, you know, on a farm. And like when I was a little older and decided to like move away from home, I was like, I'm going to model. And of course, like Christie Brinkley was like one of those people from that time in the 80s where I was like, oh, she, that's the girl, you know, she was like her and Cindy Crawford. And there's just so many like amazing models from that time. And so she was somebody that I was like, oh, she's awesome. You know, she
yes.
Thought the great work. And then I find out she's going to play my mom. And I was like, what?
Yes. Yeah. You know what? You nailed it. Amy would say that Christie literally walks in a room and it lights up. She has the, not just her smile, because of course that, you know, the $1 million smile, they call it, her personality, her storytelling, her love for what she does and for the people around her. It is genuine. And I you know, between takes many times, you know, if the setup is going to take a while, if we were on location, everybody would end up in a trailery type of thing or a big Winnebago or whatever. And, you know, Rob Lowe is a great storyteller. And yes. What I always remember is, even so, you know, we're talking this, and I love old Hollywood stories. Like, I can listen to that stuff for years. I just love it. And Rob, he would be just like the rest of us when she would tell a story. Because she has been through it. Like, she needs to write books. She has been through it. Christie
and
Brinkley.
She had. That was the crazy thing. I remember. That one day we were having lunch and it was like me and you and Rob and I like a couple of other people were in there in her trailer, like this massive bus they brought for her. And she was like, come to my bus for lunch. You know, and so we all went there. And then she starts telling us the crazy story, the story about the like crash that
the
happened.
Helicopter, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And she starts telling us this whole story. And the whole time I'm like, first of all, I didn't know any of this. And I was like, you should write a book. And she's like, I did. And I was like, oh, I didn't read it. But you looked at me like, she did. And I was like, oh my God. I didn't know that.
I'll see myself out. Yeah, I don't belong here anymore. I'll see myself out.
I'm going to exit the giant bus now.
Jim, you describe Rob that he made a deal with a demon.
Oh, Rob absolutely has cut a deal
with
the devil.
Perhaps Christie met the same demon.
They might have done the same thing because Rob is just—I could slap the crap out of him. We were just with him the other day, and it's like, what is wrong with this? This is not something is wrong.
Well, you're talking about these now scenes with Christie there too, and we meet Jerry's family, and we see the family home life. I want to know what it was like filming those family scenes. I want to know what those moments were like and on when you were shooting and when you would, you know, would cut what happened and what was that time like, guys?
I mean, I felt like we had all like known each other for way longer than the few days that we had all met because everyone had a very similar energy and vibe of like, oh, we're so excited. Like we're filming something really special and, you know, Christie's amazing. Jim's amazing. Like we're doing this thing. I don't know. It just felt so good. And it was just the energy on the set was already so special that it was just fun. And the cool part for me, because I really wanted to work with Amy and I didn't get a chance to work with Amy as much, you know, but then when we went to Jerry's home, then Amy was there. And this is, I think, one of the episodes when I came back.
Right,
after
this is Jerry's retirement.
Jerry's retirement episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So that episode, and I actually had different color hair. I was telling Jim that I was like blonde and it was like Christie was our mom. We both looked really, you know, similarly by being, you know, like blonde hair or whatever. But then when I came back, I was shooting something else. So I was brunette and with bangs. So it looked very different. But also what people might not know is that I was pregnant with my first child. And I was only like,
I knew that.
I don't think anybody on set except Amy figured it out. She like called it or something. There was something that happened and she was like, wait a minute. And I was like, yeah, I'm pregnant. And I think I was only 3.5 or 4 months pregnant. I was just barely showing, but you know, I don't remember what it was. It was some dress that I was wearing. We were trying to figure out how to hide it. So wardrobe was like helping me because I had a little bit of a bump. And so that's why my outfit was the way that it was and everything. I was, I think, behind a table. And it was like hiding. We were all like sitting at a table or something, but it was interesting. So I got to work with Amy and I was so pumped.
And this was an exact moment when we were at that table. It was the break. We were, Amy came over to the house it was the big realization. What I love about that episode, so many great things, but where Amy realized Jerry kind of did have it all.
Jerry figured it out.
Jerry had figured it out. Now, they might treat him like however at the office, and he is the punching bag.
Right.
But my God, Jerry figured it out. And so there's moments, and it still happens to me, and it's I love it when it happens. So we're sitting there. It's me, Christie Brinkley, you, the other girls playing the daughters, and Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
And that's, like, between takes, I have these moments of, how the hell am I here? Like, truly, how the hell am I here?
You know what I mean?
I still get right now thinking about it. I'm getting a little bit of chills on my arms.
I just,
those are such special moments. In that episode, I don't know, I loved every moment. And all of us sitting there singing, eggs, bacon, and toast.
Well, of course, guys.
Tell
us about that song, because that's one of my questions. There should be a Gurgitch family album.
Yes.
But did you rehearse that song? How did that
we
go?
We definitely rehearsed.
Give us the breakdown, the oral history of eggs, bacon, and toast.
I feel like we rehearsed it in the makeup trailer.
Of course. And I also feel... Mark Rivers,
who wrote our music for Parks and Rec.
Yeah, I think he sent it to us, or somebody sent it to us ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
So we're, you know, like, this is going to be this song, and so we got familiar with it.
Do you remember the Halloween episode?
Oh, dear God, yes, where Jerry had to watch Rob Lowe grind all over his daughter, yes.
Oh, my God, that episode was so much fun. And the thing I love so much about Rob is that he, like, we'll try anything and he doesn't care. Like he was trying all different things and they were like, maybe don't do that. And he like doesn't have like a thing about it, you know?
Yeah.
He was like, okay, cool, I'll try something else. And like, I don't know, I love when someone, because I worked with another actor who's like a mega star like that, and he had no problem taking notes. Like, loved it. So game on. And I just love that so much. Mm. I love seeing that. For me, I love a note because I'm like, ooh, I want to try something else.
Yeah, I agree.
But
some
people get weird about it.
You know, someone comes to you and says, let's talk about your time at Parks. Do you have a favorite moment? Is there a favorite episode you were in, or a favorite scene you did? Or give us that, you know, that Mount Rushmore moment for you at Parks.
I do think that moment for me was the Halloween episode, only because I got to work with everybody that day. Mm. So it was like... all of us, and what was like Chris and Aubrey and Red, like Rashida, like everybody came
was
in.
There,
I feel like it was like all of us showed up at some point, and that to me was so cool because I got to see like all these people that I've been watching. I got to see them all there, interact with them in some way, watch scenes what they were doing. You know, I love to like go behind the monitor and see what everybody else is doing. I'm, you know, kind of like I get like giddy about when you're on set, just the nostalgia of it all, you know, and like everything play out, and I'm like pinching myself always.
Well, let me ask you, when you found out you're Jerry's daughter, because you were someone who watched the show, so you were a fan of the show, was there a little like, ooh? Like, you know what I'm saying?
And I'm not, because I'll hold out for a better role.
No, I'm just saying, because Jerry was at that point certainly the punching bag of the office. And so were you like, oh, Jerry's not, like, was there any weirdness to that, or?
Not at all. I was so excited. Oh, I was like, this is going to be great. Who knows? I didn't even know. I'm telling you that when they asked me to do the role, I hadn't even read anything. They were just like, will you come and play this role, Millicent Gurgitch? You're going to play Jerry's daughter. And I was like, heck you kidding?
Wow. And then you find out Christie Brinkley's your mother. That's got to be like
a dream.
Yeah, that's
dream
a dream. True. Well, I never knew what was happening with that. One day, Mike said, we're thinking about a Christie Brinkley type. And I'm sure if there was a camera on me, it would have been, what? What?
Like, and you would have been like, I'll settle for the type.
I assumed I was going to settle for the type.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, who the hell thinks we're getting Christie Brinkley?
Yeah.
So I assumed.
They were like trying to get her.
I mean, it's a long story, but Sailor is the reason she did it. Her daughter, Sailor.
That's right.
Because Sailor.
Oh, because Sailor watched it?
Sailor watched it. I don't think Christie knew who we were. And the story Sailor has told me is that Christie, you know, so she mentioned to her, they called me about this show, Parks. And she goes, Parks and Recreation?
That's funny.
And she's like, yeah. And they want me to play someone's wife. And Sailor, she was trying to figure out who could it be? Who could it be? And then finally, she says to Christie, Jerry Gurgitch?
That's
and
funny.
She goes, Yeah. Oh, mom, please, you have to do it. So that is, Christy didn't know who we were.
Yeah,
But Sailor did. Yeah. Mm. So that's how
I remember her coming to set.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had to take, I remember there were like family pictures we had to take. It was really very special.
Yeah. Yes. That was a fun one to send to my dad and my mom and be like, look who's playing my mom.
Yes. Well, of course, because that would have been their era. That would have been, they certainly would have known Christy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, first, like you said earlier, everyone knows Christy Brinkley.
Everybody knows. Yeah.
She's iconic.
You remember those like photos from, you know, whatever the magazine was from that time. Like you have those embedded in your brain. Yeah. Like it's just, it was iconic. She is iconic.
And she is a smart businesswoman too. Yeah. She is not just some little blonde who people around who are making things happen. She's making things happen. She still does that. She still promotes that same machine. And she says she goes in once a year and redoes a commercial. I mean, she's just smart. Mm-hmm. And
Well, speaking of making things happen, Sarah, you also are an incredibly busy person.
You really are. Like, it's crazy.
Raise a family.
She's got three kids.
Acting,
yes.
And several companies. We would love to hear about how you also spend your time, if it's not just recollecting on Parks and Rec with us.
Yeah, you just spend your days thinking about Jerry.
Yeah. God, when do I get to talk to Jim again?
Basically, that's all I hear is, gosh, I wish that show was still on.
Mommy, I have to eat. No. I'm thinking about Parks and Recreation. You'll eat later.
Yeah.
I am very busy. I started a company with a friend of mine called Bayo. It's like an organic skincare company when I had my first child. And then my girlfriend, Teresa Palmer, she's an actress as well. Her and I started this company called Your Zen Mama. And it really just started as a place, like a community for moms to kind of go to and write articles and share stories and stuff like that. Because we just felt like we were the first of our friends to have babies and we felt a little lost in the city. Like, this is just not where I'm from. And so we kind of like created this online space for mothers. And then that turned into Penguin Random House wrote us an email that said, we want you to write a book. And I swear, I thought it was fake. Like, no way.
Wow.
No one is coming and asking me to write a book about anything.
Yeah, we're thinking of period drama.
Okay. And then like a few email exchanges, and I was like, wait, Teresa, I feel like this is real. Like, she seems legit. And she's like, I'm flying into town. I want to meet with you guys. And so anyway, long story short, we wrote a book for Australia called The Zen Mamas. And it was like a whole guide to pregnancy, birth, and beyond. And then HarperCollins here, it was like Harper Horizon, one of their branches, wanted to turn it into a book for the US. So then we wrote it for the US, and we turned that into a podcast called The Mother Days, DAZE. Mm. And so now we, you know, interview moms, we talk about birth stories, we interview, I don't know, manifestation experts, like tarot card readers, we do everything. And then I wrote a children's book. And that came out last year. And
wow.
Definitely someone coming in and saying like, hey, we want you to write something, gave me a little bit of confidence to go like, me? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try that. And I really fell in love with it.
I tuned into a couple of the podcasts. Two things I have to say about it. Number one, Teresa's voice.
I know.
That Australian accent. Oh, my goodness. So
Number one.
That's okay. But here's what I love. You can tell it's two girlfriends talking. Women who have been through this chatting, and you're also, you can tell, dear friends. And I love listening to that type of podcast. You know, like this one's tough for people to listen to because I, you know, Greg and I are just at each other's throats all the time.
This one's tough.
No, but really, you guys, it's a relaxing, calm, and friendly podcast. And I couldn't, Mother Days, you really should check it out, especially if you have kids. And I don't have kids and I loved it. So. Hmm. There you go.
I mean, it's for everybody. So, yes.
And is your husband, because you're married to Eric Christian Olson, who, quick backstory, we were at, I'm guessing a rap party, but it could, who knows? It was some kind of Parks rap thing kind of event. And I got to meet Eric. And, you know, he's as shockingly good looking as Sarah is.
Okay.
You know, so they're just these beautiful people who somehow in life that happens. I don't know. But he, you know, I always think I did 7 years on Parks. We did 126 episodes. That's the dream. Like, wow, what a gift.
Totally.
Your husband has done roughly 300 episodes of NCIS.
Yeah.
That is
NCIS LA.
LA, yeah. That is unbelievable.
It's a lot of that's a lot of episodes. I have to tell you. I did the math. It's a lot.
Right, a lot of episodes.
14 years of our lives together. And we've been together for 17 and a half years, I think. So 14 of it has been him on NCIS LA.
Wow.
Which is so crazy.
We met
doing a comedy on Fox for Will Gluck and Pam Brady. And they're an amazing, like, you know, Will is a director now, and he also writes. And then Pam Brady is an amazing writer. She came from South Park, and she wrote Team America, World Police, and she's just like hysterical. But we did a show together with them called The Loop. That's where we met. And that was, you know, like 18 years ago, which is crazy.
What a ride.
Yeah, it is really wild. Like, you get a job, and especially in this industry where the jobs you do take up a lot of your time.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time on set in a writer's room and wherever and edit with these people, and they become the second family. These shows change people's lives in unexpected ways.
Yeah.
I have to say, too, just for like anybody out there that's, you know, acting or trying to book jobs or whatever it is, like, I've always thought about it this way, and it's definitely helped me throughout my, you know, time as an actor, is that, you know, with each one of the auditions, especially something that you really, really want and it doesn't happen, like, you're putting good work out there, you're going in, like, auditions are work, you know, and when you do that and you put good stuff out into the universe, like, and you're in front of people that you really want to work with, like, it can always come back around. So you take those moments as like a win. You to go in and you do what you wanted to do and you feel really good about it. That's a win, you know? And so I remember that if that was the beauty pageant episode, I think you're right, that I auditioned for. And I remember walking away thinking like, oh, nailed that one. definitely going to get that.
We've all been
part.
There, yes.
You know, and like,
oh, that phone call will come in any second.
Yeah.
Hey, didn't happen. That's a bummer. Look what happened later. It's like,
we have to thank Sarah for this time together.
Sarah, this has been, I gotta
this
tell
is
you,
unbelievable.
So heartwarming for me to see you. And again, you look exactly like you did the day you showed up on set. And for that, like, that
really
is what it is.
It's
that is what it is. And also, everybody, go, how can people watch? Because truly, I listen to some podcasts, they're so heartwarming. So, where can people go and find you and figure out what's going on?
Anywhere where you listen to podcasts. So Apple, Spotify, it's called The Mother Days. It's D-A-Z-E. And we also record videos, so you can find us on YouTube as well.
And then what about your skincare and that type of stuff?
Yeah. So Baeo is Baeo.com. So check out Baeo. We have stuff for the whole family. And yeah, that's it.
That's it. That's it. Like, that's nothing.
Yeah. What else?
Really, so you're only an actress. You're only an actress and author. You're doing podcasts. That's
sure
it. Nothing
find,
going on.
My movie with Tom Cruise on Prime.
Wait, okay. Just a little gossipy thing. How was that?
Oh, so great.
Was it great?
I mean, Tom is a dream, and that whole process was so crazy. Like, auditioning for a movie like that was one of those moments where I was like, okay, I'm just going to go in and do the best I can because I'm never going to get this role.
I know that feeling.
Yep. Like, whatever, you know? And before I walked in, Mindy Marin is the one who was the casting director, and she was like, okay, so just like be really confident. And whatever's happening, if someone's eating, if someone's doing this, that, whatever, she was just like prepping me. She's like, ignore it, look at me and be super confident. And I was like, what is going on? And I think it was like day three of audition. So maybe people were going in and they were really nervous, you know, and like things were falling apart. So I went in for director and producers, and I started my very first line, very first thing. I totally fucked it up. Yeah. And I was like, oh no. And then I looked at her and I was like, I'm going to start all over again. And I looked at Mindy and she was like, confident. And she was like, really like, pull it together. Okay. And so I started again and I was like, okay, that went good. And then the director kind of like, his Doug Liman is the director, and he kind of like snapped up a little bit, and he was like, all right, let's try something else. And then it was just ended up being one of those moments in an audition where I was like, thank God she told me to like be confident, pull it together. Cause I didn't realize how nervous I was until that moment I messed up. And then I was like, okay. But I walked out of there like almost in tears because I was riding this adrenaline high. And then, you know, a week later, they were called and said, we're flying you to Atlanta to read opposite Tom Cruise. And I was like,
whoa.
And then that was a 4-hour audition. It was crazy. With Tom, we worked for 4 hours. It was more like a work session. And we did 4 hours of like working on different parts of the script and auditioning different things and trying out scenes and him getting notes and me getting notes and like all this stuff. But he was doing this with like three other girls auditioning. So I guess this is just his process, but it was like actor boot camp. Like I felt like it was in boot camp. Oh, wow. I was terrified.
And when you left there, were you confident? Were you like, well, there's three other girls and I don't know. And
no, I mean, I knew going in, flying there, that I was like up against other people. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I get to read with Tom Cruise for this. I just have to be so grateful for where I am and be really present and try to learn from this process, because definitely not going to get this role.
But we have the same brain when it comes to that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, you know what? But we pulled up actually to the place, and Tom is standing out front in a white t-shirt and a pair of jeans and his aviator sunglasses. And I have all my shit, you know, like when you have like bag and your jacket and like your drink and like everything. And we pulled up and he's standing outside, and I was like, God, I have so much stuff to carry inside. And it's like, I can't walk up cool and like nothing. And I'm so afraid I was going to like trip or getting out of the van with all the things. And I kind of like walk up to him, and someone comes over and takes all my stuff. And then he's like, let's just hang out and talk for a minute. And I was like,
wow,
cool.
Wow.
You sure? Yeah, Tom.
And we just chatted for like 25 minutes or something outside about life growing up, like home. This was his way of like, let's get comfortable with each other and then let's go inside and then we'll start working. And then we went inside and we did the audition, and it went on and on and on and on and on. And the next day they asked me to come back. I didn't tell me I had the job or anything. So I got in a plane to fly back to LA, and I was like telling my husband like that they had me come back in today. Like, I don't know. My husband was like, oh my God, you definitely got it. You don't. And I was like, they did not tell me anything. They just said, go back in. You guys might work on some material, but just go back. And as soon as I landed in LA, my phone rang, and it was my agent and my lawyer. And they were like, you got the job.
I love that.
What a moment.
Those are moments that will be with you for every day.
Insane.
That
is.
He puts out amazing films and all that kind of stuff. So I, wow.
He's a dream to work with. Like he wanted me to be a part of the whole process. Like I've never had an experience like that in my life. Like he had me all the rehearsals. We did tons of stuff together. He had me come to Tech Scouts. Like he wanted me to see everything, because I was playing his, you know, wife in it. We had to get to know each other really well. And then the more I was around, the more they were like writing more for the story. They've added more to, you know, the third act. Like it was just so awesome. And the process was, it was a once in a lifetime thing, I think. Like just so great. Amazing.
So great. This was a treat beyond a treat. When I got the word that you were coming on, I was giddy, I guess would be the right word. those people who have never met you, Sarah is as lovely in person as she is on things you've seen her on. She's loving and wonderful, and I couldn't be prouder to call you my TV daughter. Couldn't be prouder.
That's so sweet. It's so nice.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, sweetie. Really, hopefully we'll do this again.
Awesome.
Much love.
Sounds bye, good. Sarah. Thank
bye.
You.
Bye. Bye.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop,
We have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.